Welcome to episode 94 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. This episode marks the start of what is going to be a continuous series in which I'll showcase multiple individual or smaller groups of shots that would not in themselves make a full episode, and provide my thinking behind the image along with any relevant tips and techniques that I might have. Sometimes it will just be a showcase with nothing specific to say about it. I intend right now, having gone through my online gallery, to talk about 12 images in this and the next episode. There are no plans after that right now, but I will almost certainly be adding more individual shots to my gallery as time passes, so in the future we'll definitely see a part 3 and a part 4, etc. I could probably find a fair few other shots as well to talk about, but I haven't selected any more at this time. If you have a particular image from my online gallery at martinbaileyphotography.com that you'd like me to talk about more, then, and also, of course, that I haven't already spoken about in other episodes, then please do drop me a line using the contact us link from the top menu at my website or by private message in the forum, and I'll add that to the list for future episodes. I've mentioned an email address a few times in recent months, but the reason that I didn't mention it to begin with for a long time was the fear of being spammed, and having said it maybe just 3, maybe 4 times, I've now succumbed to a huge amount of spam to that mailing list, and it was just getting a little bit ridiculous. So unfortunately for the majority of you that use the internet for positive reasons, I've decided to disable that account. So that means that once again, the only way to contact me if you don't already know my private mail address is via the forum or the contact form. So the first image that I want to look at today is number 363. This was shot in the grounds of a temple on my way back from a walk around a park not far from my Tokyo apartment. It is of the face of a Dainichi Nyorai statue, which is basically one of the types of Buddha statues that we have in pretty much all of the temples here in Japan. The reason I wanted to talk about this image today is to emphasize that the most obvious subject is not always the most effective. Here, instead of focusing on the face of the statue, I decided to focus on one of the somewhat soiled bronze lotus flowers positioned on a long stalk to the side of the statue. There's one on either side, but obviously I've only focused on one of them here. Shot back in 2004, I was using my old 10D with my 100-400mm lens at 275mm. To throw the face of the Buddha out of focus as much as possible, I open the aperture up as wide as it will go for this focal length, which is f5.6, and this gave me a shutter speed of 1/10 of a second in this light. Looking back at the EXIF data for this, I should have probably selected ISO 400 to get a faster shutter speed, but I'd actually selected 200. Hand-holding this at 1/10 of a second means that it's slightly soft, definitely softer than I would like, but it still works relatively well. And this image has actually been used in a US-based magazine on Buddhism called The Light of Consciousness, so some others obviously seem to like it too. I think that this shot may not have worked so well if the lotus flower had been cleaner. It is perhaps tempting to brush off some of that that dried grass and dirt, but really that gives it an earthy feeling that I thought worked quite well. Then you can also see that I positioned the features of the face of the Buddha strategically in the right side of the frame, with the eyes, nose, and mouth clearly visible, though way out of focus. The bindi, or the spot there on the forehead of the statue, is also clearly visible, kind of driving home the fact that this is a statue of Buddha. The next image that I wanted to look at today is number 465. Here, luck meets preparation, as it often does when I captured a green-banded swallowtail butterfly coming into land on an orange cosmos flower. There were a few of these butterflies fluttering around in the cosmos patch in a park here in Tokyo, and I was tracking some of them with my 100 to 400 millimeter lens again, hoping for a shot just like this. Apart from the fact that I clipped the tip of the wing of the butterfly along the top line of the frame there, it all came together here. I don't even remember if the butterfly actually did land on the flower after this, but with its head and front legs sort of just entering the depth of field here, and the flower perfectly crisp, it really looks to me as though the butterfly like has its gear down and coming into land. As usual, I was making sure that I had no distracting elements in the background by watching the angle that I was shooting from, ensuring that only the blotches of orange against the green background, made up a pretty nice backdrop. Again, shooting with this aperture wide open at f5.6, I had the lens set to its longest focal length of 400 millimeters, and the ISO at 200, giving me a shutter speed of 1/800th of a second. I find that with shots like this, patience is very important, as well as luck. You can have everything come together in just a few minutes if you are lucky, but really spending sort of an afternoon at least and just sort of shooting and shooting can really increase your chances of getting something that stands out a little more. Of course, if you're aiming to shoot wildlife that's harder to come by, or you just want the right conditions, then you'll have to invest more time and often money, as I've mentioned before in podcasts. But the fact is that most of us can't go for that go that far for one reason or another, at least not on a regular basis. Usually for me, apart from a few extended trips a year, most shooting is done on either 1 or 2 days over the weekend within driving distance of home, albeit sort of sometimes up to 4 or 5 hours or so. So getting yourself to the right place with the equipment that you need to capture your intended subject and giving yourself plenty of time can give you more than a good chance of capturing something to be proud of, like I am of this shot. This next shot, number 504, is one of those that I shot on more of a family type outing, a trip, as I was walking through the back streets in Kyoto with my other half. Kyoto is a beautiful place steeped in culture and oozing with photo opportunities, and I have to admit that I can't really pinpoint why I like this photo. All that I know is that whenever it shows up on my desktop in a slideshow of my shots, it just captures my attention. Trying not to sound too vain, of course, I like all of the shots that I display in my slideshows. It's like my best shots folder. But I obviously, I spend a lot of time looking at them as they sort of come up. I usually have a slideshow running as I'm watching TV, and I'm not really concentrating on the TV. But what happens is, they just sort of flit past, and when this one comes on the screen, it kind of grabs me a little bit more than some of the ones around it, though I can't really understand why. I thought I'd include it today anyway, just because of that grab factor. This was shot towards the end of 2004 with my 20D now and the 100mm macro lens. It was raining, which explains why those little like twinkly lights at the end of some of the leaves are there. Because it was overcast and raining, I used an ISO of 400, which with an aperture of f3.5 gave me a shutter speed of 1/80th of a second. I was in aperture priority mode, and I'd applied minus one stop of exposure compensation to stop the background from becoming too bright due to the large patch of dark leaves in the frame. The camera would have also tried to make the scene brighter, more like a sunny day, and the atmosphere would have been lost. You can see that I included the old style window of a house making up the back on the house in the background there, and there's the diagonal top of a roof over the doorway, and like a bamboo, a very thin bamboo screen on the upstairs window. That are, you know, these things are often used in Japan to stop the hot sun from entering the room during the day to keep the room cooler. These are kind of like graphic elements and shapes, but because I focused on the overhanging leaves in the foreground with a wide aperture, they're all sort of out of focus, as you'd expect. They're in focus enough, though, for us to be able to make them out enough, and this makes it sort of makes us sort of work harder to understand the shot and split the graphic man-made elements from the natural elements of the leaves. Maybe this is why I like it. In talking about this, I may be coming on to the reasons why I like it, but I'm still not quite sure. In image number 573, you can see what initially seems to be a black and white image. This is, in fact, though, a shot. It was a shot that I obviously captured in colour, and I've not converted in any way. The file is still a colour image. I shot this in January 2005, again with the 20D and the 100mm macro lens. I was walking in the Nature Research Institute not far from my home in Tokyo, and I noticed this dried-up flower head with the seeds kind of mummified there, left over from the previous season. It was just sort of sitting in the shadows there, waiting to be photographed. And because of the shadows, and, you know, the scene basically just seemed to have lost all of its colour. Apart from the slightly detectable brown cast of the stem and the flower itself, and the dried grass in the background there, just slightly tinting the shot with brown. Again shot at ISO 400 because of the low light, an aperture of f5.6 gave me a shutter speed of 1/80th of a second for this shot too. The depth of field from an aperture of f5.6 at this distance is quite shallow, but it keeps enough detail in the back of the flower for us to still be able to make out the overall shape, and yet throws the background out of focus so much that it's just like a patchy layer of bokeh, which is what I'm usually trying to do with my photographs. In winter in Tokyo here, it's relatively warm, and definitely in comparison to places like England, basically that's where I was brought up, as you can tell from the accent, or even Hokkaido, which is like the bestest place in the whole wide world. These places are much colder than Tokyo, but on this day there was quite a nip in the air, and I recall how clear and fresh the cold air was when I shot this. Or maybe it wasn't that cold. Thinking about it, you know, I can't help think that maybe my memories of this day are being altered by the stark appearance of this wintered, withered flower head. This reminds me that photographs are not just a record of an event or a particular day or subject, but as our actual memory of the days fades, photographs become that memory. In years to come, if my memory does fade totally so that nothing is left, I will be able to look back at all of these images and remember these years that I spent here in Tokyo, assuming that I'm no longer in Tokyo, of course, but I'll be able to recall everything. Or at least I'll be able to look back and confirm the memories, and hopefully it will jog something. And probably start to fill in the gaps, I'll be able to start filling the gaps that I don't recall from imagination that I hope will still be intact, even if the memories aren't. Now let's look at image number 1026, shot almost exactly a year ago at the same location. This was the end of June in 2006 with my 5D and my trusty 100mm macro again. I titled this photo Gas Mask for reasons that I hope will be obvious if you're viewing the image along with me here. A little sort of ID work after the shoot revealed that I'd actually photographed a female Astosia virgotypis, or virgotypis, I don't know how you say these sort of academic names of insects, but it's basically a type of large fly native to Japan. With ISO 200, I shot this handheld with an aperture of f4 for 1/120th of a second, And I should also mention that I was using the Macro Twinlight MT24EX, which is a strobe system from Canon that allows me to totally control the angle and the strength of two individual strobe heads that are attached to the front mount of the camera, of the lens. Because I was using the twin light, I could have gone for a much smaller aperture to get more depth of field. But I really wanted, I don't particularly like shots with lots and lots of depth of field, at least this type of shot. So here again, it just really helped to for me to be able to shoot relatively freely, handheld, with a good shutter speed and the amount of depth of field that I want. And really, what that does is helps to keep us focused on the most interesting part of the subject, which are those big sort of rainbow-coloured insect eyes and the straw-like mouth protruding down below them, looking quite a lot, to me at least, like a gas mask. It also allowed me to get the front legs pretty much in focus, and we can also make out the second set of legs behind those. The torso of the insect becomes just a pale, fuzzy blur, though, kind of acting as like a backup element for the gas mask-like face. It's all too easy when shooting insects with macro lenses to get into the habit of bullseyeing them in the center of the frame, especially when hand-holding your camera, because focusing is much easier if the subject is in the middle of the frame. I really, though, what I wanted to say is that unless you're really just documenting the species with no intention of making artistic images, you really want to still keep composition in the forefront of your mind. Sometimes bullseyeing the subject will work. Of course, all of these rules are made to break, and sometimes it will work. But you can see that I've used the rule of thirds here by moving the subject away from the center to the left vertical third line. And this, of course, increases the amount of leaf that we can see as well, and is much better balanced, I think, than it would have been had I just sort of put the insect smack bang in the middle of the frame. Let's look at one last image for today, which is number 1152. Here we can see again the face of a statue of Buddha, and this was Amida Nyorai, not the Dainichi Nyorai that we saw earlier. They're all sort of named. This is at the Sensoji Temple in Asakusa, a popular spot for both Japanese and foreign tourists visiting Tokyo. I go there once a year or so, sometimes just for the hell of it, but more often these days when friends come to town and I head out to show them the sights, as on this occasion. Unfortunately for my friends, I can't go anywhere like this, at least without taking a camera. So I generally sort of end up keeping them waiting to varying degrees while I get shots like this. It was raining quite heavily on this day, and the thing that caught my eye with this subject is the rain that had run down the face of the Buddha, giving the appearance that the statue was crying. It's a relatively large statue, so I put the 1.4x extender onto my 70-200mm lens and shot from far enough away to get a good angle at the face. I didn't want to shoot from too low an angle looking up at the statue. Again, a dark subject on an overcast rainy day, so I applied minus 1.3 stops of exposure compensation in aperture mode to keep it necessarily dark. The aperture was f4, and that's the widest aperture for this lens with the 1.4 extender fitted. But at this distance, that does give me enough depth of field to keep the whole face and the sort of the hair on the right side or the left side of the subject, the right side as we look at it, in focus. Yet, once again, it gives me some nice out-of-focus bokeh in the background. I tried I tried converting to black and white. And one of the Lightroom presets, without doing anything else to it at all, really brings it out very well. And I might upload another version at some point. But for now, I kind of like the swirly patches of green that are left, in the color version by the green of the leaves in the trees behind the statue. Note too that I purposefully cropped this very tight on the face, chopping off the bottom of the ears and going along the top, the hairline of the statue. And really, I didn't want to leave too much room in these areas so that the viewer can see without doubt what I was trying to portray, which is the tears of the statue. Also note that I prefer the landscape or horizontal aspect rather than using the portrait for this. I shot a couple of portrait frames, cropping in even closer on the face, but that became too much. The bokeh either side of the face here, I think, helps add in balance, in my opinion at least. The ISO was set to 200, by the way, which gives me a shutter speed of 1/30th of a second, so I was relying heavily on my image stabilization while hand-holding for this shot. Apart from the exposure, compensation, and composition tips, there's really not anything more that I wanted to say about this shot itself, other than the need to keep your eyes and mind open to opportunities like this. I'm sure that 90% of you would have also seen this image had you walked around the side of the temple, but this is what I wanted to briefly talk about before we close. Every time I go to this temple, there's no one or very few people in the grounds around the sides or the back. Everyone walks along, through the row of shops or small stalls that line the pathway up to the temple and go inside for a quick pray. But from the number of people that I see either side or behind the temple or in the grounds, I can only deduce that 99% of them simply turn around and walk back down the same route and out of the temple grounds. I've spoken about this before, way back in episode 3, but it's amazing what you can find by just looking behind yourself every so often, or, going around the side and taking a look behind buildings and sort of staying aware generally of what's going on around you and just sort of looking a little bit more and being a little bit more adventurous. When walking around with friends, I'm often told that I unnerve them a little bit, or maybe not told that I unnerve them, but they seem a little bit unnerved, and talk about the fact that I'm always turning around or sort of peering in places that people wouldn't normally look. And pretty much constantly, I'm sort of on the lookout for things like this Buddha that, they deserve very much deserve to be photographed, if only you venture into their domain. I've actually come away from certain locations in the past without a single shot of the main attraction, and it often doesn't even appeal to me photographically. But some people say when I show them shots after trips, why didn't you shoot this or that? And the way I see it is, if I want to simply document the place, I might well shoot a few frames, but they would simply remain, those shots would simply remain on my hard drive as just that, a document of the trip. And, they are really just a reminder to me of what I saw, but shots like this will rarely make it onto my online gallery or become the subject of my podcast. So hopefully I'll be striking a chord with some of these image discussions. Again, please do mail me if you would like to hear about any other images in my online gallery. When you do so, please include the URL from the bottom of the image page and not from the address bar of your browser. The browser address is relatively dynamic, changing depending on how you got to the image. And, but basically the URL below the image is a permanent absolute link. So this too goes for the links that you send around of your own or other members' images from the mbpgalleries.com website, where many of you are sharing and commenting on each other's work. I do need to quickly apologize for around half a day's outage of both websites last week. I don't think any data was lost, but I did receive a few email from members saying that they'd received a mail saying that they'd received a private message from someone in the forum, but when they looked, there was nothing there. And at first I thought that this might have been caused by the sender deleting the mail from their outbox before the recipient had viewed it. But as there were two people on the same day, I'm thinking that there might have been some data loss there at the beginning of the outage. So if you sent someone a private message on Thursday or early Friday last week, especially if you didn't receive a reply, please check to see if the recipient has actually got it. Sorry again though for the inconvenience and for the inconvenience caused by the outage itself. And many thanks to those of you that gave supportive comments once the site came back up. And one last piece of housekeeping before we finish. Remember that the movement assignment is underway. All entries should be shot after Monday the 25th of June up until the end of the assignment, which is going to be finishing on August the 5th, 2007. You'll be able to upload your entries to the assignment album on mbpgalleries.com until the end of Sunday the 5th anywhere in the world, so no need to worry about time zones. For more details, take a listen to episode 92. And with that, all that remains to be said is have a great week, whatever you have planned. Bye-bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.